Hey listeners, you're tuning in to a podcast about Kids in the Hall that easily veers off into mature subject matter and includes a whole heck of a lot of swearing. Enjoy the show, eh? Welcome to Kith and Tell, a podcast about Kids in the Hall, where you can get at least three dangerous vices for the price of one.
Oh, God.
We'll be reviewing every episode with witty banter and unmissable segments, like the various shades of the Chicken Lady's sexual deviance, and how much would you pay for a dedicated hangover hotline? I'm Kalina McCordoff in London, England, and I am joined by Hans Seidemann in Vancouver, Canada.
Go to the gutter and starve. Bring your children with you.
Stuart Derekotic in Victoria, Canada.
Gotcha.
And looping back to the mainland, Trevor Record in Vancouver.
Certainly wasn't doing cocaine.
Well done. Good one.
Yogi Bear.
So we'll be reviewing episode 8 of season 5, which aired on December 28th, 1994, which was apparently a Wednesday, IMDb tells me. So let's kick off with our sketch rundown. We have got a trio of short sketches where a dirtbag drunk offers to chat you through your night, or a hangover at 555 Slut. Then we've got Chicken Lady Goes to the Mall, does disturbing things with the mechanical horse on a daily basis.
This is a raunchy episode.
It sure is.
You know, don't yuck her yum.
Don't yuck her yum. Old People, a Bruce monologue about his disdain for the elderly, including their voracious sexuality and their scalps that I think he said are dry and flaky like a rice cake.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
Office worker Kevin stews on one of Mark's pranks, resulting in fantasies that really go too far. I think there is a gunshot to the chest.
Shotgun blast, no less, yeah.
Fitness instructors. So we've got step class teachers, Mark and Bruce, who are just getting increasingly personal with their insults after stealing each other's playlists and lunges. A lot of blind melon, apparently. And we finish off with Dinner Party, where like a Vincent Price-esque Scott emerges as the coked out boyfriend of our sweet academic boy, Kevy.
That's such a good comparison.
Right? I want to start off with something that seemed to jump out at me as quite obvious as we closed this episode, which is this seems to be a basket of vices. You know, we've got drugs, sex, and violence of all sorts. So I wanted to see whether you guys felt that too, whether you think that was intentional, and if that jumped out at any particular points in the episode.
I mean, Kalina, I was thrilled that you did this because I feel like I've been harping on the Mr. Show secret theme a lot lately.
I'm trying to think of when we were talking to Paul about the process of writing sketches and putting together episodes and stuff. It sounded as if, it didn't sound as if they wrote episodes and then recorded episodes so much as they just wrote a bunch of sketches and then cobbled together episodes from what had been written and filmed and staged,
kind of batched
everything.
Them out.
Well, and I remember him saying that one of the biggest challenges of writing for TV was around getting everything to fit time wise in with the live sketches and stuff. So it does make me wonder, it wouldn't shock me at all, and it does kind of feel like it in this case, that they, you know, when you're assembling an episode and you've got a bunch of sketches that are drug and alcohol related, you know, I don't think they were necessarily thinking of the Chicken Lady or Kevin's sketches being vice related, but certainly the cocaine and the 555 Slut sketch, I could see them being these feel like they kind of go together for this episode.
But no hookers, so.
Oh, good point,
No literal vice.
It was interesting kind of just to have it bookended that way, right? You come in straight to a cold open where isn't even one of the kids doing this 555 Slut segment. And you have absolutely no idea it's going to be repeated, for one thing. But he's, tonguing this bottle of beer.
Oh, God.
Ugh.
Getting into, the really dark shit about, alcoholism, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you've been drinking and you want to talk about stuff, give me a call. Like, I want to talk to you. I should be able to stay up till four in the morning. Don't keep me waiting. It's just like
yeah.
the sea of bottles. Like, he's sitting in this disgusting robe and t-shirt. And then mm-hmm. you get that, like, the ending of the episode with... I mean, I didn't particularly like it, but like the coked out Vincent Price Scott sketch that mm-hmm. I didn't really laugh at any point. I guess the joke was that Scott gets to overact. I don't know. But I mean, you definitely have the drug addiction theme, like you said, Hans, like right in your face.
Well, I think they do pick those final, like those closing sketches. Like it seems to me like they usually have their closing sketches be a bit punchier. So it does seem fitting that they started off with that cold open that is alcohol and then finish off with this really punchy cocaine sketch. Like that does feel like a natural bookend. And so like, I agree with your conceit that like, was this episode structured in this way? I think, you know, yeah, probably there were some choices that went into that go like, oh yeah, these fit together. Maybe not as much on the Kevin vengeance or violence rather, or the what was the other vice,
or the sexual deviant.
Lady. Yeah, I don't think that's a bit more.
Where did the fitness instructors or the office gotcha thing fit into this?
Vengeance, violence. I think that
wrath.
Fits in.
Wrath. Yeah, it's, you know, it's sins, not vice.
Okay.
Yeah. and the old one is sloth.
Yeah, that's fair. Unless they're banging.
I wanted to be contrarian for a second and just be like, even though the 555 slut bit is so bleak, I think it's also kind of uplifting too, that it's like, hey, do you need someone to tell, like, providing a service, like this almost like understanding rather than isolation. I think that's kind of cute. I mean, it sucks. Everything sucks.
This 555 slut one, I've seen a bunch of other shows copy this essentially too. Like, wasn't there one on Tim and Eric that was essentially like this, where it's like a guy wants to like talk to you? And I think there was like another one on maybe Mr. Show that was a lot like this too.
Canadians trailblazing again.
This is comedy that like will not have aged at all well for anyone that's like even 8 years or so younger than us.
You can go to your payphone and call.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Sex worker.
Well, no, this is like we talked before about how this show doesn't date itself very often, as you know, because it does sketches that aren't fixed in time as much. But this one is definitely a pre-internet sketch where people would call sex lines instead of just getting porn on the internet. It was also fascinating how much it copped the style of those like sexy phone line ads from the mid-90s, where like it would be, you know, women lounging poolside with like, you know, water dripping off their body, and in this case it's just him tonguing a bottle like sensually, and like that there's lots of bottles nearby is a feature, not a bug, because it tells you this guy drinks.
Do you think,
you know,
that like this is about like who the guy that phones the sex line is, basically, like that's the whole conceit?
Ooh.
Like, who is the person that phones it up, kind of thing?
I saw it more as like, you know, when somebody has a problem, you have the friend who's more of a problem, and you're like, my stuff's not so bad.
Yeah, I like the concept of like this ad airs at the same time as those 90s, you know, sexy phone call infomercial half hours would air, which is like, you know, that midnight hour. And like, so I like the idea that it's like, hey, what if we had a sex phone line that was for drunk men, but instead of like for sexy ladies, they just call another drunk buddy, you know? And like, you know, maybe they were ahead of their time and recognizing that men just, you know, drunk men just needed a human connection, and it didn't have to be sexual. They just needed another drunk buddy to talk to.
Yeah, because they actually cured male isolation after that. It's only I mean, the thing that makes me the happiest is there's a non-zero chance, because this is a cold open with no title bumper. There's a non-zero chance they were back to back, and someone was like, "What the fuck?" Like someone got.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a chance that this came on, and someone was like, "What is going on? This exists?" And yet, yeah.
All right, so I think we can move on to our second segment, which is kind of related, and it's about Chicken Lady. I don't know why, but for some reason, this felt more explicit, but maybe I'm just misremembering or have forgotten, or perhaps like really shoved down into my subconscious her previous forays for reasons of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So, did this at all feel like a bit of a blinder for you guys, or was it all run of the mill?
No, I do definitely remember this. I probably at this point like am less shocked by it, I think. With age, it's just it seems more in bad taste and less funny now, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
That was their Bart Simpson, man. They needed to get Chicken Lady on the
air. Yeah, yeah. Of course they got to get her out there. And I guess they had to keep on... You know, this one is... Like, we were talking about it before we started recording, and this is, like, one of the standout memories of Chicken Lady for some of us, I think, too. And it's it comes in quite...
Because of the trauma.
Quite late in the series. And I guess it's just, like, they'd been ratcheting up what Chicken Lady does. And they'd already, like, shown her... you know, at the, like, strip club with Rooster Boy and all this other stuff. So yeah. They're like, okay.
Was that the first one?
No, that was later.
That was the second or third one.
Kalina,
I was going to say, I don't... Explicit is a weird one, because that to me says more, content. And to me, it's the exact same content of the strip club. It's the context, which is, you know, in public, children. Around a child specifically. But, like, the gag feels exactly the same to me.
Yeah, you know, Stu, that's, like, a really good point, because I'm just looking through the list of Chicken Lady sketches, and I...
List them off for us, Hans.
Well, so we start off with Chicken Lady Blind Date, where the guy goes back to her house, and, like, she basically sexually assaults him. Then there's Freak Show, where she's at the circus as, like, a freak show person with the bearded lady, with Kevin's bearded lady. Then there's... Phone Sex, where she's, you know, calling up a phone sex line.
Yes,
there's Strip Club. Then there's Bearded Lady Marries. So she goes to the Bearded Lady's wedding or something. And then is, like, sleeping with the Bearded Lady's future husband, I think. Then Chicken Lady Goes Home, which is that, like, Bruce movie of Chicken Lady.
I like that one.
And then now Horsey. But, I mean, of all of these, one, like, probably this one and the Bearded Lady Getting Married are, like, the least, like... sexual, or, you know, maybe the Bearded Lady is the least sexually explicit, but this one is the one. I think what you're objecting to, Kalina, is that this one has the most normies in it. It's just Chicken Lady and a bunch of normies in a mall.
There's the most collateral damage.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is the one that underscores the fact that Chicken Lady is harmful to society the most.
Yeah, because this one is far less, like, violent or explicit than, like, either the strip club or the blind date or the sex phone line or, God forbid, you know, the Chicken Lady Goes Home one, where there was, like, lots of, you know, kind of gross sex things happening, right?
But, look, if anyone has an encyclopedic knowledge of Kids in the Hall sketches, it's Kalina, and she is, like, distressed by this one.
It is so vivid in my mind, and I think it is precisely, like you said, I think it's the collateral damage. That must be it, because before it's like, well, I know she went on a date with this guy, or she's calling the hotline, or it's like... a couple in a house, which, like, that is terrible. But she doesn't quite recount it the same. It's not like observing her getting herself off on a children's ride.
Well, all the other ones, other than the seeing the family home, are, like, at least ostensibly sexual, like phone sex, strip club. That's a private space. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She's already in a context where this kind of thing is. Towing over a line, but it's not like a it's not a grocery store with children.
But I think that's why this one stood out to me. Like, this is the one that I have the strongest memory of from when I was a kid. And
how did that form you?
Well, let's not get into that. But I mean, I think for me, what I always liked about this one, and I like this sketch, is that because it's Chicken Lady with a bunch of normies, like, the absurdity of it is dialed up, and it doesn't. It makes the sort of, like, yeah, her masturbating on a kid's ride in a mall, like, it feels less, which is funny to say this about Chicken Lady, but real. Like, the other ones, there's, like, they touch on, I think, more of a, like, a real, you know, thing that people do experience, which is that, you know, whatever, loneliness or, like, sexual frustration or whatever. And this is just, like, nah, Chicken Lady's just getting off in a mall and a kid and his grandma's, like, is, like, brought into the act unwittingly. And, like, because it's so absurd, I find it maybe more funny and less dark-tinged, maybe.
It is weird that this is the one that we thought we'd seen already.
Yeah, I thought this was, like, a season two bit, when it first popped up.
Yeah, I guess we don't know whether there is more Chicken Lady coming up. This may be one of
the
last.
No, we do know that there is no Chicken
this
Lady.
This is it.
Oh, yeah,
this
was wow, it.
That
okay.
was the last one.
She went out with a bang.
As we see Chicken Lady Ride into the Sunset. At least we know what her daily schedule is now. She washes herself in the toilet like she did the day before. She deposits $3 at the bank, rides the city bus till the sun comes down, drinks 2 bottles of tequila on the
loading dock.
On the loading dock. And gets to the mall for 6:30.
You know, maybe.
And yet forgets. She deposits her $3, but doesn't bring any quarters.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah, maybe she shouldn't. Yeah. Well, that was back when they had $2 bills.
Poor financial management, either way, I will say.
Yeah, that's the biggest criticism.
I wanted just to remark, though, too, that she said that she does this every day, same as the day before. And yet everyone in this mall seems surprised to see her getting off on this horse. Like, this has never happened before.
Well, yeah, you know? Because once you see Chicken Lady do that, you don't go back to that
mall. You never go back.
That's the Kingsgate Mall. You don't go back.
All right, well, on that note, let's move on to segment 3. I want to talk about 2 sketches in particular. So Office, the gotcha sketch, which felt very referential to My Pen, and some others, which I know you guys are going to discuss. But you guys also mentioned the Bruce monologue feeling a bit of a throwback. So just wondering how you guys feel about these sketches. Are you getting the sense that these are kind of poor mashups or references to previous sketches, or are we polishing not previous turds but some previous work? Because I'm gonna put my cards on the table here. I actually like this one more than My Pen,
which
for
is
example.
wild.
I saw that coming a mile away. I was like, you would not have written this segment if you didn't have something awful and contentious to say. My
Thank
Pen
you.
Is great. Yeah,
it's really good, but it is that repetitive thing. We obviously continue to yell My Pen at each other ad nauseum, but here you get like the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday like time run in which he's having like these exaggerated memories, these slow-mo repetitions. He's not just saying My Pen. He's like, oh, it wasn't that funny. I don't know why everyone laughed so hard. It's the oldest gag in the world.
You can watch his deterioration and
yeah. Time. Which, okay, and I didn't want to mention this earlier because I'm really interested in your guys' like hot takes on this. He then, in the middle of nowhere, says prick, which to me was like, is this the creation of Sizzler Sisters?
Well,
yeah.
I mean, Sizzler Sisters have been around for 5 seasons.
No, but this could be...
Time is a flat circle.
He doesn't hit the R as hard because pricks. He's kind of just more like...
Exactly, it's because it's the start.
Right. I like that.
Thank you.
A lot.
Anyway, that has nothing to do with what I was trying to ask, but I just needed to put it out there.
Kalina, I respect your opinion, but you're wrong. These are pale imitations of better sketches. I'm sorry.
Yes. Hit me.
Yeah.
The monologue, we were talking about this before, and I don't really know how to succinctly put it, but it's like the Bruce monologue. Bruce is one of the only cast members who consistently does monologues, and when he does them,
Buddy,
that's true. But Buddy's,
they all do monologues.
Buddy's a bit,
yeah, Bruce is doing them more, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and they're all like, you know, ostensibly disparate. Like all of his monologues, like the shouting numbers with his hangover for that last week.
right.
That was good.
Like he does, Bruce seems to write these more, and when he does in the past, it feels like it has more of his own personality and like flavor to it.
Mm.
The joy he says when he's like 17, 21.
Yes.
Six.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas this one, I don't know, it just kind of felt like filler to me, which is weird because Bruce usually has such a like unique and strong identity, like it usually comes through.
Yeah, I mean, that was my feeling on both of these. I mean, is that they both follow forms that have been well established and well trod by now, but they don't have neither of them felt like they had anything new to say, and they were just kind of borrowing bits or coasting on former glory of former bits, right? In that the Kevin sketch felt like it was a kind of a grab bag of ideas from my pen, from the beard, from, I think, Stu, you had pointed out that that one where it's like everyone's against me. I can't remember the name of the sketch.
Was that Kevin?
Yeah.
Was he the lead?
It's a bunch of, and then also a medium amount of power. Like if you just kind of
moderate amount of power,
I could see you feeding those sketch transcripts into ChatGPT and then getting this sketch out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like that.
And then the same thing with Bruce. You know, this sketch is like so, or this monologue is like so many other monologues, and it has some of the defining features of the Bruce monologue, which is that kind of fun use of, I think of it as like cowboy patois. I think Stu, you had said earlier, it was like more of a punk vibe. But it's got that kind of, he's got some fun turns of phrases that feel very much like Canadian rural punk kid something. But this one just doesn't have, like, whereas the other ones, he would have a topic that drove it more forward. This one is just, he's just griping about old people. Like, there's not enough meat on those bones to make a whole monologue out of it. And no amount of kind of twee Bruce wordplay is going to make it up.
I remember reading about this season and the kids just commenting that they felt very tired at this point.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of showing a little bit.
What do you think about these, Trev? And generally, are you getting that tired feeling out of them?
I've got to like address them separately, I guess. So the Bruce monologue, I think he's done many monologues, and this one is probably not one of his funniest, maybe one of his least funniest, because there's not really anything that's particularly a good laugh line. Like maybe the idea that old people have sex sometimes was like more novel back in the 90s. I think that's something that people have ground to comedy dust at this point, though. it's like lost any sort of shock flavor, and it's kind of cute to think about his grandpa wearing a Jurassic Park t-shirt for children, but that's the only lemon juice I get out of it.
Yeah.
I don't think I fundamentally agree with you, though, that the Office sketch, the gotcha sketch, is the same as my pen. I think they're about fundamentally different things. One of them is about like feelings of anxiety when someone sort of takes a belonging of yours and then you entrust them with it and they breach that trust. And this is a sketch that is about like how feelings of resentment can fester into something that is far, far exceeding like whatever kind of minor slight might have originally happened. And so I think they're like fundamentally about very different subjects, and this one didn't need to happen in an office at all. But as he's imagining this guy getting like killing him and so forth, and eventually he gets fired, that's the only thing that like makes it need to be in an office, is just like he's cheering for the fact that this guy has been fired at this point. He has lost any and all empathy for something that, like, the guy was a jerk, but it was very, very minor.
I disagree. I think it has to be in an office, because I felt like a big part of it was this feeling that of like injustice, that it's like he's a jerk, but everyone likes him and he's doing well.
Yeah, but Stuart, like very... I was 100% with Trevor on that. Because I feel like I've definitely had that experience of someone says something and maybe they intended it, it like hurtfully or not. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But where I take it away and then stew on it for a week and concoct a whole story about, you know, how this person is out to get me or hates me or whatever, is trying to turn everyone against me. And then eventually a cooler head prevails.
I feel like we've probably fades, right? At one point or another all felt this way about each other interchangeably for one reason.
Well, yes. Well, but that's the thing. I don't feel that way at work. I mean, I get that amongst my friends more than anything, right? So like for me, I totally could see this happening with being more relatable in some ways if it was with friends. However, you then lose that opportunity to like, get the guy fired and, you know, cheer for his children being penniless,
yeah.
Right? But
yeah, I don't know. To me, it feels so rooted in the Office scene that it's like, you know, not only is he's like, he's being bullied and the guy's doing well, and it's like that, you know, like successful white guy failing upwards.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, in summary, I don't think this is a ripoff of my pen. However, I do think that my pen is better because yes. it, like, as a work Ooh. Of film is better. They put more effort into, like, the framing of Kevin having high anxiety Bruce. Yeah, not Kevin, that one, but Bruce.
Did you think this one was funnier?
No, my pen is funnier.
Than my pen?
Oh, okay. All right. Just trying to pigeonhole you all. Thank you.
Sorry.
This one also feels, I mean, we haven't talked about the beard sketch very much, but I mean, that sort of framing of the descent into madness, like this really echoes the beard in that way too, in the way that Kevin gets. And like, that's a well-trod structure for a Kevin sketch Kevin descends into madness, you know, like we see the process and enjoy it. And I like this sketch, but it just feels like it's treading old ground.
And then eventually he becomes the can-do guy because he's got absolute zero empathy.
that could be
or I mean, god, yeah, Sizzler Sisters or the guy, fuck, there's so many
the unified
options.
Kevin universe,
yes.
The Shriekiverse.
All right, so before we go, let's choose our standout and worst sketches with a rating out of 5, or whatever you want to make up. Keep it short and sweet. Trevor, kick us off.
You know, I am going to give best sketch, because we didn't talk about it too much, to just the, like, nailing the tone and everything of those late night sex line ads. So and it also, because it is just one of those like in between sketches things, but it's so well done. 555 slut actually I think is the standout for me this week.
Yeah.
Quickly before we move on, I forgot something I wanted to ask you guys. Do you think this would have been as effective if it had been played by one of the kids?
Oh. I don't know. I don't think so.
Who
the guy they
could
got
have
was
done
so perfect.
It. Like I don't think that Mark would have done it justice, because I think that this guy is, he's got restraint. He's a slovenly grotesque man, but Mark would have hammed it up a bit too much, you know?
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. I was thinking about Mark with the like weird toe.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a bit too pathetic.
That's way
it's
bigger.
Not quite like leaning into the
Yeah, I mean, it would have had to have been Bruce or Mark, but I don't think either of them would have done it. I mean,
Bruce could have done it. I could see Scott doing it, but he would not have been. He wouldn't allow himself to be that slovenly, you know?
Exactly. He would not allow himself to be seen that
even in the gutter, he would shine like a diamond, and it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Trevor, what's your worst sketch?
Old people. It's just not very funny.
Yeah. Mm.
Fair enough. Stu?
I'm probably going to go with Trevor on this one. I think 555 Slut is the most interesting.
Yeah.
And plus, best feature for a non-kid, always fun.
Yeah.
I also didn't like old people because I didn't really see the point. It felt soulless, but I think the chicken lady is my least favorite, which is I feel like is really baiting because it is the most memorable one, but like there's nothing new. She blows up.
That's
just
true.
It's just the chicken lady. She just chicken stuff. I don't know, man.
Just chicken stuff. Hans.
So I had both Needed Elsewhere, the cocaine sketch, and Call Me as kind of both four drunk hotlines out of 5.
Wait. Sorry,
I
want to. We had which ones is your top?
I had the cocaine sketch. I had the
really
the tops and bottoms. Yeah, I had the cocaine as a 4 as well.
What?
No,
that
dinner party I think is good. It is a good sketch.
Yeah,
4.
It does come
out
up
5?
On like best of.
It comes up in a lot of the best ofs. It's one of the ones that you can find on YouTube easily.
The interplay between Scott and Kevin is so good. Like Scott's just outrageous sort of. Like taking for granted Kevin, and Kevin just tiptoeing around like his own little domain in his own house, and this moment where he has this little drink of schnapps and declares he's as bad as yeah.
That is such a strong ending to that sketch too.
Okay. Well, and like, so it's a well, I'm going to, you know, I was considering joining the other guys because I did love Call Me, and I think they've pointed out why it's such a great sketch, but maybe I'll make my case for the cocaine sketch then. So the other thing that I love about it is the construction of the characters in it, right? So you have kind of nebbishy Kevin, you've got the straight-laced Dave woman, you've got the absolutely out of his coked out mind Scott, who his acting in that is also just phenomenal. And then you've got, like, how did they come up with the idea of having Mark just be this happy, smiling idiot who says nothing and is just happy to go along and is just a blank piece of paper
with fake teeth
bowl of unseasoned mashed potatoes. He's just got nothing. And yeah, I think with some fake teeth as well. Like, it's just such a such a strange thing to put a character like that in a sketch, but I think it weirdly it relies on that kind of straight man to make it all work, especially against Scott's just over the top. Like when he comes back, I think from the first or the second time he goes off to do cocaine, and she asks him about Arizona, and he's just like, his eyes are so wide and he cannot keep still, but he's like moving in these jittery motions like birds do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
they move in discrete, you know, in discrete movements. Anyways, he's doing that at, like, you know, yes, Indians and Indian artifacts and excuse me, I'm needed. he nails it. The dynamics of everyone else work well. Stu pointed out before we were recording that there's like an all-time great insult just sort of hidden in there where Kevin says, he's so horrible to me. And Dave, the wife, says, yes, well, at least horrible is something. And then looks over at Mark, who's just smiling happily, just happy to be there, doing nothing. And then his silent, like, stretching, doing exercise, like, stuff, getting ready to go out to the club to do nothing elsewhere but on cocaine at the end is also fantastic. Yeah,
I feel like Dave is actually pretty good in that too.
Dave is kind of the straight woman in that sketch, works really well too.
And what is your worst, Hans?
It's the old people.
All right, 1990s Bruce, you really phoned that one in.
Yeah,
I agree with you guys. I think 555 Slut is an absolute banger. 5 out of 5, I think, for the whole trio.
So I was going to say, do we all think, like, I thought they got worse over time. I still liked them all. But the first, for me, it's that cold open first one that really, like, stood out.
I kind of like the ending one with Dave, where he's like, is someone drinking all your booze? Like, at first I was like, oh God, like, was he narrating it the whole time? And I'm like, oh God, no, it's Dave now talking about his friend who you've seen in the previous two iterations. He's like, but it's my dump, you know? I thought that was like a really good way to, like, cap it off. But yeah, worst for me, it's actually between Fitness Instructors and Dinner Party, both of which I would give like a 2.
Really? I didn't think Fitness Instructors was that bad. What's wrong with it?
I just wouldn't watch it. Like, would you actually put it on ever?
No.
You would ever rewatch it?
It's not when I'd ever show it anyone else, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how much we liked 555 Slut, considering we've never talked about it before. We've never thought about it.
Yeah, I forgot about it.
It's a revelation.
I think that part of the reason we liked it was because we didn't remember it, and so it was new. Yeah, it was new to us.
The sleeper.
Well, because it wasn't an episode that was played during children's hours on the CBC back in
if
late
90s.
If we
had never, ever, ever seen a Chicken Lady sketch before, we would probably be talking about Chicken Lady. But
Well, this is true. Yeah.
Yeah. But we're connoisseurs, okay? We don't want your slop, Mark.
Mark, we're over Chicken Lady.
We want the
Mark.
Good tenders. Yeah. I want the tenders, not the gristle.
All right, well, that is all for our episode 8 review. Join us whenever we publish our episodes now. I don't really know. for episode 9.
Next week.
Is it?
All right. Next week.
We'll see.
Hold us to that. And that'll be hosted by Stuart. In the meantime, you can find us on some sort of social media, X, I don't know, Twitter, maybe Instagram, and weigh in on your favorite sketch, and we can enjoy some delightful gifts if those things are still going 10 years from now when you finish editing.
Someone is salty that we're not making more progress in getting our edits
I done. Have started editing. That's good. That's good.
Sure, guys. But either way, thanks for listening.
How the turns have tabled.
Bye.
I don't envy you having to edit that outro.